Anybody here new to me? Oh, good. It's a great mystery in the world of human beings, a really huge mystery. It's very mysterious to me. It's not the things that are ordinarily thought of to be the mystery, you know, like reality and God and all that stuff. The biggest mystery to me is how it can be that the desire, that the idea that we lack something arises. How it can be that the whole structure and idea that something's missing, that is the idea that drives us into suffering and the belief in bondage and the belief in enlightenment. There's another great mystery, the belief in enlightenment. It's really the same mystery. The belief in enlightenment and the desire for it, or self-realization or awakening or whatever name you're accustomed to calling it by, the belief and the desire for enlightenment is the same thing as the belief that we are lacking something and the desire to find what it is we are lacking and be done with it. And it's a huge mystery. You know, all of the really great beings, I'm not speaking of the originators of religions and liturgies and practices and those who come after the great ones to explain and build on what they've received from them. But the really great beings that have appeared among us over the ages have all told us the same thing. They've all told us that we are consciousness itself. We are the eternal radiance of consciousness itself. Whatever vocabulary they use, it all resolves down to that assertion. They have told us that there is nothing whatsoever wrong, that there is no problem, that the idea of a problem itself is a misunderstanding, that there is nothing to get and nothing to get rid of, and that our true nature is self-evident and shining everywhere, in all time. And obviously, we have heard something from them, because we have been quite energized by their appearance and by what they have offered. We've created civilizations, religions. We've shed oceans of blood, created and destroyed civilizations. We've tortured each other, hated each other, loved each other, tried to do for each other, tried to take away from each other, all in this energy that has appeared from those who have told us that there's nothing to get, there's nothing missing, that there's nothing to get rid of, and that the truth is self-evidently present, eternally present, now. But even without them telling us that, I mean, all they're pointing out to us is what is perfectly obvious. The truth. Reality. What's here now? This presence that we are. This shining radiance that we are. Without regard to the particular shape and structure of our lives, of our personalities, and so forth. We know. If only we will just cop to it. We know that we are this presence. And that this that we are has never moved, has never changed. So it's a huge mystery to me that there should appear within us this idea that something's missing. Well, not that. I mean, that's just an idea, that ideas come and go. But that then that we should latch on to the desire to do something about it, that we should become so in love with this idea, so attached to this idea, that we spend our lives forever searching. And that's what we do. Well, even for those among us who have never happened upon the idea of spiritual liberation or spiritual enlightenment or any of that, our lives are spent in this morass of something wrong, something lacking, something not right, something I could get, something I wish I had. And all that we do our life long is search. All the judging and the comparing and the I like this and I don't like that, all of that is aspects of the search. The search for what I should keep, the search for what I should get rid of, the search for understanding so that I can do it right, so I can be effective. The search for understanding of what it is that I'm doing, why I'm doing it. This desire. No, it's not the desire. There's really only one desire. Really only one force that we call desire. Or we might call it the life force. We might call it, God knows what we might call it. But we ride it in service to the idea that there's something I can get that will solve this horror that is life as a human being in this world. When we come upon spiritual stuff, when we come upon the spiritual realm, we perhaps think that finally we have gotten on the right track. Finally we know what it is we're searching for. Finally we have left behind all the ignorance and confusion of the realm of the worldly. And we now know finally, once and for all, what it is that will really do it for us. We're searching then for peace and freedom, enlightenment, awakening, self-realization. And if we are honest, we can discover very quickly that when we are searching for peace or freedom, when we are searching for awakening or realization or bliss or ecstasy or whatever spiritual concept is is alive in us in this moment. If we're searching for those things, sure to God we will find them. We will find peace and freedom and awakening, enlightenment, bliss. We will find these things in the form that comes and goes. And they will stay with us for a while, and then they'll depart. The peace we have found through searching for it, the freedom we have found through searching for it, the awakening we have found through searching for it. We will find them, they will stay for a while, and then they'll be gone, leaving us bereft, wanting them back. The truth is much simpler than anything we can find. The truth is much less than peace or freedom or bliss or enlightenment or awakening. And if there arises within us the willingness to lose peace and freedom, enlightenment, awakening, and all of those things, the absolute willingness to lose them, then for the first time it becomes possible to find ourself, which is the only truth of the matter, and which needs no peace, no freedom, no awakening, no enlightenment, no bliss, needs no bondage or confusion, aggression, needs no lack of those things either. My teacher's teacher, Papaji. Everybody familiar with Papaji? They've heard the name at least? It doesn't matter. My teacher's teacher, Papaji, is said to have said, as his the essence of what he had to offer, call off the search. Call off the search. And that sounds good, right? I mean, that sounds like the real deal. Of course, Papaji himself said again and again that the one mystery that still attracted him irresistibly was, from whence comes God? Now that sounds a little unsophisticated to our Western ears. The point being that the originator of the admonition to call off the search was never finished searching. Almost his last words, save one, was, where is the Buddha? There's a lot of inside stuff about what he was really talking about, but what we know for sure is that the last thing he had to say on this earth was, where is the Buddha? So Papaji, the one who gave us this great offering, call off the search, himself was never finished searching. Never. Ramana, who was Papaji's teacher, advises us to ceaselessly seek ourself. Ceaselessly. Search for ourself. So, if there's anything to be gained by observing these two great beings, it certainly partly can be that it's not the search that's the problem. The search is what enlivens us. It's what makes human life adventurous, wondrous, magical. But the search, when it turns into a search for something to get, or a search for the understanding that will inform me as to what must be gotten rid of, that search stinks. Stinks. Nothing good has ever come of that search. Ramana, his central message, his central invitation to us, the core of his teaching, is to find out who you are. And the truth is, as Papaji also said, the truth is that discovering the truth of who you are doesn't take any time. I tell you, in this moment, right now, in this moment, if you will look nakedly, free of spiritual concepts, if you will look for the experience that is you, you will find it and know its nature. No question. It can't be missed. It can be missed by attending to a lot of spiritual ideas about what you are and what you should be and so forth. But the simple experience of being you is self-evident. Can't be missed. It's here now. Always here. Unmistakably you. And unmistakably unbound. And unmistakably real and true. Has nothing to do with the personality, with the mask that plays in the world as you. Nothing whatsoever to do with it. At the core of all of that is you. And it's not hard to find you. It is hard to avoid you. So, what can Ramana be thinking when he tells us to seek yourself ceaselessly? Well, there's no end to you. And that's the truth too. There is no end. There's no beginning to you. There's no understanding possible of you. There's no container in which you can be placed. There is no end to the joy and the satisfaction that arises within the mind that is turned to its source. There is this search for yourself that is finished in the instant is begun. This search for yourself is precisely what you have been looking for all along. And there's no end to it. You are eternal. You are the reality. And there's no end to the delight and the satisfaction that's available in, for all time, looking directly into your own nature. sinking deeper into your own nature, into this eternal consciousness that you are. And that's, in my experience, that's what we want. That's what we want to do with these lives, and it is that that is cheapened and profaned in the allegiance, the loyalty to the idea that what's wanted is out there, that what's wanted is something gotten rid of, that's wanted, what's wanted is something new to be had. And once the truth of the nature of this desire breaks upon you, you will never be finished with investigating yourself. So that Ramana's suggestion is not an instruction, it's really a prediction. If you will take as your only true purpose in this life, finding yourself, you will never leave off from that. You will never find a time when that is finished, when you've had enough, when it's time for to look for something new. Who you are is self-evident. The boundaries of who you are inexistent. No matter what arises, if you will fall into it with your consciousness, you will discover at its core, at its bottom, you and you alone. No matter where you look, no matter what assails you, no matter what delights you, if you will look with your consciousness into the heart of it, what you will find is you. This is why any phenomenon that appears, if investigated, disappears. You know that, right? Anything. Fear, hatred, aggression, anger, confusion. These are all sensations. When the experience and the sensation underlying these phenomena are met and truly looked into, they seem to vanish. It's not that they vanish, it's that they never were. They are you. So all I ever have to talk about is this truly holy search, this truly holy quest to find the end of you. Finding you is easy, really. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to find yourself. You can't escape from yourself. You can't get rid of yourself. Finding the end of you is impossible. So Ramana says that self-realization is self-inquiry. That's right. Self-realization is self-inquiry. They are the same thing. The mind that finally turns inward toward its source and stays there is no mind. So all I ever have to talk about is this inquiry. It's not a means to get anywhere. You are nowhere. You are here. It's not a means to get anything. You are no thing. You are all that is. It is the purpose of our life. Truly. The desire for this is what drives the whole show. Truly. And the finding of what we've been looking for is the finishing of all the foolishness. Not instantly, but the finishing of all the foolishness, all the hatred, all the aggression, all the murder, all the lying. Nothing else works. Okay. So what do you want to talk about? Anybody not have a clue what I'm suggesting? Believe me, I'm not trying to be mysterious. Okay, Joellen, I've been waiting for you.
I can always think of something. If Ramana is saying there's nothing else worth doing...
If Ramana is saying what?
There is nothing else worth doing.
Yeah.
But to look inward.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing here? Everything I see happen is a mystery. Human behavior is a mystery. The weather is a mystery. Looking inward is I don't know why it stops, but that just is. And what are we doing if that's all, if that's the only purpose?
Well, what if it's not the only purpose? Does that give you a clue as to what we're doing here? I mean, forget that being the only purpose. Now do you know what we're doing here?
Absolutely not.
Well, so it doesn't make any difference whether that's the only purpose or not. You still don't know what we're doing here.
That's the frustrating thing. It's, what is the truth?
Right, and that is exactly, what is the truth is exactly the core of this desire that drives us to slaughter each other, to love each other, to do all the things we do as human beings. At the core of it is this deep need to know the truth. The offering of Ramana and all the other great beings, the offering of Ramana is to tell you where the truth is to be found.
Well, it's, I can feel it, but I can't describe it.
Does that surprise you?
That's what I've been told.
Do you think
to
that,
expect that?
Do you think that the truth needs to be described? You see, that's the problem, right? For all of these thousands of years, we have been trying to describe the truth and failing. That's not what Ramana offers. It's not what any of them really offer, a description of the truth. What they offer is a direct meeting with the truth. A direct meeting with the truth.
And I see that that is endless. Is that what you mean by never coming to the end?
You see the what in it?
Never coming to the end of it?
Have you found a place where you are not?
No.
And have you seen every possible place that you could be?
Of course not.
Well, then there's no end to you. I mean, here's the thing, Geraldine. I can tell you there's no end to you, right? I can preach to you. I can say you are infinite. You are endless. There is no place where you cannot be found and so forth. I can do that. And although I'm not very eloquent, I can probably do it eloquently enough to make you believe it. But that ain't the point. The point is that or the claim is that once you turn your attention to yourself, you will naturally be drawn to yourself and you will never find an end to yourself. That's the claim. Once you turn your attention truly to yourself, leaving behind all of the stories about why you would be doing that, and I don't mean you personally, leaving behind all the stories as to why you would be doing that, for example, to get peace or freedom or awakening or enlightenment and so forth. Once you turn your attention to yourself naked of any idea that anything is to be gotten from it, you find what you've been looking for. But you see, as long as you go there riding an idea of what you will find, you will find what you're looking for in that moment, but you won't find the truth of your nature. When you turn your attention to yourself naked of any idea of what you will get from it or that you will get anything from it, you will find what you are looking for. And you will naturally be drawn there. So that the admonition to inquire ceaselessly is not an admonition, it's a description of what occurs. When you naturally find what you've been looking for, you naturally stay there. I mean, you know, surely there is the energy of conditioning and so forth that makes that intermittent in the beginning. But finally you come to rest there. Never finding an end to it. Finally, you come to rest here, at home, and find no end to it. And the delight, it's not the weather that's the delight. It's the consciousness of the weather that's the delight. The weather's not a delight to pitiful animals who are caught in its tyranny of cold and wet and hot and dry and so forth. The delight in the weather is the consciousness of the weather. The delight in the world is the consciousness of the world. And that consciousness is you.
I'm usually horrified at the awareness.
You're horrified at what?
At the awareness of what's going on in the world. But it,
can you
I know
say
that
you're...
I'm not looking in. I'm listening to the news or something.
Yes, right. But the horror from the news, right, you are aware of. Is that not true? The horror itself is you.
Must be.
That's you. At the heart of everything whatsoever is you. And it is certainly, you know, I mean, I don't care what your political persuasion is. What is horrifying to some is gratifying to you. And vice versa. What's horrifying to you is gratifying to others. It is the arising of this horror or gratification that have at their core consciousness. They are the same. They are you. Now, the...
Find delight in the variety, or the play, or the fact of the awareness that it is, that it's possible.
What's the question?
What do you find delight in? You find delight in the fact that you can be aware of the vastness?
I find delight in consciousness. As do you. There's no delight in enacting the story, in fighting for the story, for your version of the story. There's no delight in that. You know, it's the taking on of the mask of the one who is acting and doing things. There's no delight in that. The delight is consciousness. The delight is the infinite, absolutely infinite magic of consciousness. I don't delight in seeing murder and slaughter and hatred and aggression. The emotions that arise are emotions of horror and sadness, huge, huge sorrow. But in the core of that horror and sorrow is consciousness. And that is ever delightful. And it is the same consciousness. It's not my consciousness and your consciousness and Bush's consciousness and somebody else's consciousness. It's the same consciousness. If Bush looked within, into whatever is happening within that being, he would find the same self. The same consciousness. delighting, not in what's being accomplished or what's being taken away or what's being given or what good's being done or what bad's being done. But delight, consciousness delights in itself. And by some mysterious alchemical magic, when consciousness consciously delights in itself, the energy of the form shifts. The movement toward hatred and aggression weakens and vanishes. Short of God, nothing else has worked. Short of God, for these past 10,000 years or so, we've tried everything else. We've tried government and no government. We've tried slavery. We've tried liberty. We've tried war. We've tried peace. We've tried war against war. Nothing else has worked.
So there is a sensation
in
this apprehension of consciousness.
In this what?
A sensation.
It's all sensation.
What about the delight?
What about it? I tell you that delight is the nature of every sensation. The sensation of frustration, for example. I tell you that delight is the nature of every sensation, and that everything whatsoever, all of our most exalted ideas, all of our most complicated and swirling emotions, all of our thoughts, everything whatsoever, is sensation. Naked sensation. I is sensation.
You mean the one I?
I'm sorry?
The one I?
Yes, it's sensation. It is experiential.
Then I have an idea of what you're talking about.
Huh? Yeah.
Then I can feel like I know what you're talking about.
Good.
A bit.
Good. This is
It's still quite mysterious, though.
Hmm?
It's still quite mysterious.
Oh, it's not still quite mysterious. It is finally really mysterious. You know, most of what we talk about is mystery and mysteriousness. We're just making it up. We're just cobbling together some set of ideas and philosophies or perceptions, interpretations, and imbuing them with mystery.
Well, we might as well let it just remain a mystery and not try to figure it out.
Yeah, you should never try to figure it out. I mean, you can if you want to, but that stinks.
Yeah.
When I'm speaking of inquiry and investigation, I'm never speaking of figuring it out. I'm speaking of, well, feeling it, really. Just that. That's the investigation.
Yeah.
It is the feeling of it.
Without mind.
Without anything. No matter what it is, however it presents itself, just to fall into it. You know, we use all kinds of, we wrestle and work so hard to try to find some way to express what we're saying. We say move into it with consciousness, or dive into it, or meet it, or welcome it, or God, you know, God knows what other things. But really, it's just a matter of feeling it, nakedly. Whatever arises, feeling it, nakedly. Allowing yourself to fall into it fully, unprotected, without understanding. And then, there, here, the knowing that has nothing to do with understanding is self-evident and obviously has never been absent. Obviously. That knowing is the delight. What the sages call causeless joy. And we make, of course, any time the sages say something, we make a big old deal out of it. And the poor things.
We have to spend all this time on the world, though.
Huh?
We have to spend all this time on the world, on the thought stuff.
We don't have to.
Well,
we do.
We were made to.
We were made to?
Well, we were formed.
We choose to. Really?
I'd like to choose not to, but it's not possible.
Maybe we're talking about something different here. Are you talking about existing in the world?
Yeah.
That's not possible. You cannot choose to not exist. That's not possible. But what you can choose to do, and what everybody can choose to do, is continue the same old stuff. We can choose to continue seeking understanding, seeking enlightenment, seeking peace and freedom, seeking an end to all the evil that is being done by all those evildoers, seeking an end to all the evil in myself. We can choose to do that. We choose to stay in thought, to think that thought means something, that the content of thought is precious and important. We choose to do that. And we can choose not to. But the tricky part is, if we think that, okay, I get it, I'm going to choose not to dwell in thought, if we think that that is what I'm pointing to, then we get caught up in dwelling in the thought about not dwelling in thought. The way we choose not to dwell in thought is to dwell somewhere else. And the only somewhere else there is you. The heart of you. The nature of you. The truth of you. And that's a choice. Okay? All of the things that we prize so highly, that we think so much of, and, you know, all of these great human features, or bugs, whichever, all of these great human characteristics, emotion, elation, fear, horror, compassion, romantic love, loss, yearning, frustration, confusion, stupidity, brilliance, clarity, insight, all of them, on and on and on, all of them are only stories about some present sensation. Really. And you see if that's not true. That's the beginning of the investigation. You see if that's not true. In all cases whatsoever, all of our human characteristics are stories about some sensation. The investigation is to meet that sensation and know its nature. I am frustrated. What is that? What does frustrated mean? It means some experience that I have learned to call frustration and learned to dislike intensely. I mean, it's so obvious that frustration is something not to be wished for. Frustration, the very definition of the word, tells us it is something we want to get rid of. But it's an idea, a story, about some sensation. It presents itself as a body sensation somewhere. The invitation is to forget about the story and find out what the story refers to directly by feeling it, by falling into it, this sensation. And they're all that. Fear, horror, all of it. Human love. Sensation. Feel it. See it for what it is. I tell you that what you will find there is you. But the only way that you know for a fact that what you find there is you is if you first find yourself. So you know what you look like. And you can recognize yourself when you find yourself in unexpected places, like at the core of frustration. And you, this you-ness that you are, that too is a sensation. It is a background sensation. It is presence. And it's self-evident. And you know it to be you. And if you can fall into that, that I-ness, that ego-ness, if you can fall into that, knowing that you're falling into yourself, then you can't be fooled again. And then, when it occurs to you to, in the midst of some ugly experience, to find out just what this experience is that is so ugly. Really, find out just what it is. I promise you, what you will find is that same eternal presence of consciousness. That is you. And then you get to see what they're talking about when they say all is one. Then it's possible to see directly that there is not two, that there is only you and you alone. Which is much different than what my experience was, which was trying to imagine what that felt like and create from that imagination a feeling, a state. Anybody else? Yes.
I'm curious that you talk about looking past the actual elements of what sensations are and actually seeing the sensations for the true being of them. Is that what you're trying
to
say?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm suggesting that you leave behind the idea of finding meaning at all.
And just feeling.
What you're looking for is not meaning, in my suggestion. Meaning is the same old, same old. What you're looking for is the truth. the actuality. Do you see the difference?
I'm thinking I do.
Okay. You see, it's like this candle flame here, right? I can understand this candle flame. I can even understand its meaning in the world. I can even assign some meaning to it. I can understand it on a quantum level if this individual mind is sufficiently sharp to hold all that stuff. But no matter how much I understand this candle flame, and no matter how much I see its place in the world and its meaning here in this display, for example, I know absolutely nothing about its actual nature unless I plunge my finger into it. Now I'm close to knowing more about its nature, which has nothing to do with meaning, nothing to do with physics, nothing to do with perception. And that's what I'm suggesting that investigation is about. It is the willingness to leave behind the idea that I'm searching for meaning, to leave behind the idea that I'm searching for peace or freedom, to leave behind the idea that I'm searching for anything whatsoever but the truth of it, the actuality of it, which is inaccessible through a cloud of ideas and thoughts. Yeah. In fact, it's the ideas and thoughts, the only purpose they serve, really, is to keep us from the truth. And that's why we deploy them, in order to keep us from the truth. We get perversely to preferring to know the ideas and the names and the relationships and so forth between things than to know their actual nature. And we get so habituated to that that we can even, once we get involved in spiritual stuff, we can even conclude that we are bound, that the mind stops us from knowing the truth. We can even come to hate the mind, which phenomenon no one has ever been able to find in the first place. So just meet what's here, naked, unprotected, not knowing. If it's possible to understand just this, that understanding has never done you a bit of good. If it's possible just to understand that, that's all the understanding you need. And then you can find the truth. You know, and in spiritual circles we say the truth, and it's like capitalized and with throbbing, radiant special effects to it. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the actual simple truth of the matter. Just the truth of it. What is this really? What am I really? Not why am I here, or where am I going, or what should I be, but what am I right now, really? I know what my parents told me. I know what society told me. I know the things that I figured out for myself. I even know what the Buddha told me and Jesus Christ told me. But none of that's of any use to me. What am I really? Right now. Here. In this moment. That's the investigation. That's the inquiry that Ramana offers us. And of course, we made a big old deal out of Ramana, too. Probably going to turn him into a religion pretty soon. Okay? This is what I really want to get across, is the unspiritual nature of what I'm talking about. The simplicity of it. The radicalness of it. Not radical like wild or unconventional. Not that meaning of radical. I pursued that meaning of radical for a while. But the real literal meaning of the word, which is a return to the root. Return to the root. Return to the simple beginning of things. Before the Buddha. Before Shankara. Before Ramana. Before Jesus. Before Gangaji. The root of it. The actuality of it. And that's here. Here. Always here. Always, always now. The actuality of it is never then. Never. It's now. The other thing I really would like to get across is that truth is not for the few. Really. It's not for the special few that have gone through lifetimes of puja and sacrifice and practice and so forth. It's not for the few who have happened upon on an enlightened master. It's for everybody. It is everybody. It is everybody. Everything. And that's the mystery to me. It is so obvious. It is so self-evident. It is so inescapable. How can we miss it? How in the world is this possible? How is it possible that we concoct stories and religions and practices and hierarchies and saints and sinners, the meritorious, those without merit? How can we miss it? It is everything. It is inexhaustibly present. It is you. It is you. It is you. Anything else? Anybody else want to speak? Gail, I'm glad you made it. Okay, then. I'm very happy to meet with you like this. You are myself. You are the truth of being. This is the delight. This is the delight of consciousness, this meeting together. So my prayer, always, always now, is just this. May all being know itself. I leave off the remainder of that common prayer. May all being know itself to be love or consciousness or whatever. Just know itself. May each and every one of us come to know the actuality of ourself. And if it turns out that that is love, so be it. If it turns out that it is not, so be it. It's the truth we want. Really, it's the truth we want. So may all being know itself. Thank you for this satsang. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.